and welcome back to As If, Contemporary Art Podcast with Lisa Fibral. I accidentally took a break. Yeah, it was not planned. And it wasn't planned because I did not expect my computer to just completely give up on me. Same with my headphones. For some reason, all of my technology like broke within like a week. I mean, it's been breaking in the process of breaking for a while now, but I just didn't expect it to give out at the same time. In any case, another thing is that if you're watching this, you know that I'm wearing a beret and I'm wearing a little shawl and I'm basically going full babushka court today because it's cold. Okay, it's cold. I need to do something about this. So let's start with music today. Okay, so the reason why I want to start with music is because Red Velvet came back, and if you're not a fan of Red Velvet or you don't know about them, I would recommend you check them out if you like really intricate productions, if you enjoy either hyperpop or R&B, and I know that those two are very different, okay? Like, I understand that, but Red Velvet does like a really wide variety of genres, and I feel like you guys might like them if you don't like them already, because they just got it going on. Their concepts, they always hit, like every single time. It's crazy. It's genuinely insane. I think that there were a lot of people who did not, maybe they didn't like their comeback, like this latest release. I think that people liked it, but I've also seen people complaining about it or saying that it's boring, and I don't think that it's boring, okay? I think that this is actually perfect because the album is called a Chill Kill. The title track is also Chill Kill. They were supposed to release their second track on the album, Knock Knock, Who's There, as their like lead single. But they decided to go with Chill Kill when they heard the song. And honestly, I understand why, because even though to me a lot of the songs on this album are really good, all the other songs on the album are way too straightforward to be a good title track for them. I mean, I think that maybe they can come back with a repackage and do like a little R&B number. I would absolutely love that, because my favorite song and favorite music video, everything by them, is actually Automatic. And there's a lot of people who don't think that Automatic is a like single, a title track. It is. I don't give a fuck. It came out at the same time as Ice Cream Cake, and it got its own version of the album and whatever, whatever. I think it was a double title album, so don't come for me. I think it's a title track. Anyway, I think that you should check it out if you haven't, because yes, I'm going to talk about the songs right now. I'm sorry if you're not a fan of them. I'm sorry, but you should get into them because first and foremost, the concept for this album is great. The girlies are oftentimes have some kind of twist in their concepts. Sometimes you get like a really bright concept, but then there would be something weirdly sinister going on. Like for example, they have this song called Cookie Jar, and it's a song that was made for the Japanese debut, I think. So it was like made for a very bright market, I guess. They were going for more of a cute thing. But at the same time, in the video, they're like making a bunch of desserts or whatever. And then it turns out that all of the desserts are made with really gross shit, like buttons and shoelaces. And there's a bunch of ants and other insects crawling on it. Very much like Picnic at the Hanging Rock. Is that the name of the film? I can't remember. But it had the same kind of imagery of like ants running around cakes or whatever the fuck. A little bit creepy sometimes, but it's like my favorite type of creepy, which is when the feminine horror is explored, which is the juxtaposition between something cute, something feminine, and at the same time something grotesque. I was talking about that before in my Sonmi video essay, where I talked about her music videos and how she explores all that kind of stuff in her visuals and her music, and I really love that shit. And I think that honestly, Red Velvet killed with this comeback. The visuals are crazy. I don't know if you know this photographer, but his name is Chugusok, and he creates such great photographs. It's absolutely insane. You should check him out on Instagram or something. Like, I think that you're gonna love it, because it's a little creepy again, or a little gross sometimes, like just a little bit. But in general, it's just like, it's gorgeous regardless of all of that. When it comes to music, this song Chill Kill is so interesting. It's very jarring when it switches from the verses to the chorus, and honestly Red Velvet does that a lot. But with this song, I honestly got very accustomed to that after a few listens. It really works for me. And I also really love that it conceptually makes a lot of sense. So for example, the whole topic of the song or the concept for the comeback is bright tragedy or hopeful tragedy and experiencing something good while in the midst of something extremely bad. And I think that they did such a good job with a lot of the visuals. So for example, one of the visuals that they were using a lot was a butterfly. That one is a little bit on the nose in the sense of like everyone knowing that butterflies are usually involved in the ideas of reincarnation and starting anew and all of that kind of stuff. So it usually is also a little bit sinister. So the music also does the same thing. The verses are quite dark and more R&B and with a heavy bass. I would say R&B in terms of like the delivery of vocals. And then the chorus hits and it changes the mood entirely because it switches to major chords all of a sudden and a major key. And I really love the way that it was done. The music video is absolutely insane. I think that in the music video, one of the girls, so they're kind of playing sisters in that music video, and one of them goes upstairs and like basically kills their abusive dad. Yeah. But they're not like obvious and gross about it. Even if you're squeamish, you can still watch it. Then like the visuals are so good in the music video. Honestly, if you like interest in visuals, I recommend watching it anyway and looking up their photo shoot for this album. Now the next song is Knock Knock, Who's There. Fantastic too, honestly, but I understand why they didn't go with it as a title, even though they were planning on doing that, because it is a lot catchier and a lot less jarring in terms of switch ups than the first song. But girl, it's not as interesting. It just isn't. Like, it would be just Psycho 2.0 but with a better music, but not interesting enough. Now Underwater Girl, that's the third song. It's an R&B type of number, and once again I'm just waiting for them to come back with an actual Velvet song as a title, because I'm tired of waiting. It's been ages since Bad Boy, and it's been even longer since Automatic. Like, I want a Velvet title, come on. I'm hoping that they're going to do it the same way that they did in 2018, where they had Peekaboo and then they did Bad Boy. I'm hoping. But apparently there's like no schedule for a repackage for them, which I'm side-eyeing. I am, because that's crazy. Will I Ever See You Again? Also really great, but a bit less intricate. Then we have Nightmare. Nightmare is a bop. Reminds me of the idea of the Carnivalesque by Mikhail Bakhtin. It's like this guy who made this theory of like writing, it's in literature, with a constant switch in point of view in a way that decentralizes the main character. And I wouldn't say that this is like what you would expect traditionally when people say switching POVs. I just mean that the narrator knows a lot more. I guess, you know what, look it up, Carnivalesque by Mikhail Bakhtin. Anyway, I'm gonna make an episode on it sometime, because it's hard to understand, but it's a very interesting concept that I use a lot in my artworks. I really like the sound of the song. It reminds me of something like Nutcracker or something along those lines. Oh, also Knock Knock, Who's There? Literally described it as a girl in 1860s London deciding to hunt down the owners of the factory she's been working for since she was 5. Just hunting them down one by one. That's what it sounds like, you know? Then there's Iced Coffee. Really glassy and pretty, but not too special. One Kiss. One Kiss is okay. It's very poppy, but I don't think there's enough weirdness in it to be truly Red Velvet. It's a good song though, anyway. Like, a lot of people are gonna like it, I guess. It's not my personal favorite, but I know that a lot of people are gonna like it. Bulldozer, also really fun, but I wouldn't say that it's my favorite either, just because it's too straightforward. It's not, there's nothing super interesting about it, and that's what I like about Red Velvet, is usually they're oftentimes giving something really interesting with their music. Wings has really, really good production, and if you're a Wings girl, check it out. I think you're gonna like it. And the last one is Scenery, and I don't give a fuck, because it's a ballad, and I'm sorry to those of you who like ballads and you like pretty songs. I see you, And sometimes when I'm in the right mood, I am you. But most of the time I'm not. So I'm just gonna kind of, you know, I know I'm not gonna listen to it much. So it is what it is. Regardless of all of that, Pink Panthers has a new album out. Also has a lot of good songs. I don't know which ones I like more yet though. I'm gonna deal with it later. There's a new Catching Fire, girl. I'm always on my second movie from the Hunger Games trilogy agenda. There's a prequel to the Hunger Games that came out, and let me ask you one question. Why did they have to make Snow, President Snow, that asshole, so hot? That's just kind of fucked a little. Like, what the hell? You know what? Whenever someone is that blonde and that blue-eyed, even if he's cute, like, it's the kind of cute that also makes me really uneasy. And, like, I do have blonde, blue-eyed family members. Not that blonde, of course, but still. And I'm still unsettled. Like, it's just, especially when they're wearing the uniform. Girl, I do not like a man in a uniform. I am the last person who's gonna like a man in a uniform. They make me feel so uneasy. They make me feel on edge. They make me feel like the worst things are about to happen, the worst atrocities you're going to see are about to happen. I avoid men in uniform like the plague, genuinely. Even firemen, bitch. Like, that's how nervous it makes me. Like, I really just don't like it. But why is he sexy? If evil, why sexy? That's just not right. It just isn't. I don't know what to tell you. Also, about that, even when you watch the trailer, you're gonna see like this huge mural in one of the scenes where the train is kind of coming to the capital. And there's like, the mural is very much like Soviet type of imagery. And I just never understood how a lot of these like Western production teams genuinely make a film about a structure, a political structure that literally has one city that, like, one place that sucks up all the money, all the resources into it while making everyone else starve, who actually produce value, who are actual workers. And then they look at that and they go, this dystopian situation, this political setup, that sounds like, do they ever, have they read books? Any books? Actually, no, not any books, because there's so much bullshit that's in books now. Not even now, ever, because anyone can publish a book. But have they ever learned anything before going into this production and stuff like that? Like, I just genuinely never understood that, specifically about movies like this, because they always take this imagery that they try to, like, you know, like, take brutalism, and they try to take the designs of the old cars or the murals and artworks and propaganda posters or whatever the fuck, and every single time they do it for political structures that closely resemble their own. I just don't get it. Like, do you not see the parallel that is being created? Do you not see that politically that doesn't make any fucking sense? Like, I genuinely don't understand. Every time I see it, I'm like, okay, so we skipped international politics. Mm-hmm. We skipped philosophy classes. Mm-hmm. University was spent with our ears and eyes closed. We only listened to annoying ass 60-year-old men, white men in North America when we were in class. We only listened to them because that's the only way you could still think that and not feel like a goddamn idiot. Sometimes it's just like really frustrating to talk to people about things in general, because you're just kind of realizing that they don't know the basics, and it's things that are not like speculative, even facts, simple facts. Because the thing is, like, obviously there's things that can be modified in history, whatever. I'm not talking about history, I'm talking about what the basis of the binary of political and economic structures is and what left and right means. It's like they have this skewed idea for some fucking reason. I don't know, girl. It's like, it's really weird. If you're European, or you are from anywhere else in the world but like North America, and you moved here, for example, you probably feel so weird because their whole like idea of politics, unless you're talking to somebody who studies it and not far right, they just for some reason don't know the difference, don't know where anything is on the political spectrum. It's fucking ridiculous. Anyway, how did we end up here when I just wanted to talk about the character of Snow, the actor being hot? How did we get here? I don't know. Every day I try to be more lighthearted. I'm trying to make content that will make people feel better. And every single day I end up here. How? I don't know. The life of a working class person, I guess, will bring you here. Oh, by the way, that reminds me. So this TikTok fucking, you know what, pissed me off to no end. It was basically this like podcast with this people who are in there. I believe the youngest people in that room are probably 30 something. And then there's like a dude who's like 50. And they were talking about that girl who was complaining about not having time, and that she is spending a lot of time on transit, and that technically speaking, she does not have any time for life. It's just work. And they are going in on her. They're like, well, welcome to real life, kiddo. You should create your own opportunities. You should create your own jobs. And it's like, okay, not everyone can be kicking dicks all day. Is that a saying in English? That might not be a saying in English. If it's not, girl, I'm sorry, but we're gonna start saying it. We're gonna make it a thing. Not everyone has time to just kick dicks around all day. Just saying. Just letting you know. Because it's like those people are genuinely from like a parallel universe or something. I mean, like they clearly are the type of people who did not work actual jobs, even office jobs, let alone a customer service job or, you know, retail or something. Like, they haven't even worked a cushiony office job that's all like already annoying because it's 9 to 5 and there's transit and other shit like that, right? And that girl who's talking about this, she's right. Because for how on the fuck of the earth are we in our 20s not able to even socialize at all? And then they're complaining that the birth rates are dropping. Oh my god, people are not dating. What the fuck did you think was gonna happen? If you make it that difficult to just survive, you think people are gonna have the energy, the money to get out? There's no third spaces that don't require money and quite a bit of it to be there and to be surrounded by people who are in your age bracket. Like, put two and two together. It's so fucking annoying when people are so dumb. There is a limit to how dumb you could be without pissing people off and without making their day worse. That's why education is important, girl, because there is a limit. There is a limit to how much people can handle. Another thing I wanted to talk about, which was actually going to be the main topic of this podcast today, is the fact that we need critics, art critics, culture critics, and why we need them, honestly. And I don't mean people who are just like screaming about things being good or bad without having any affection for the type of medium art that they are talking about. I'm talking about people who actually do pursue it and study it and stuff like that. And also, I think that those people nowadays especially should have some kind of presence online in the sense of people knowing their taste, because I think that that will give a lot more value to the present people who are reading the reviews. Because the thing is, reviews are more important retrospectively than they are in a current sense. Things that are going to be popular because people like them or because it's like entertainment that is either good or it's lowest denominator kind of entertainment that will appeal to more people, regardless of which one it is, it's going to garner a certain amount of buzz just based on who's in the movie, how it's being marketed, who wrote it. Yes, there are some things like quality affecting it to some degree, but most of the time it's all about the way that it was pushed, you know. So critics and their writing, their think pieces are more important retrospectively. That's why you should be thinking more about what you actually think about this as a piece of work within the industry that it was produced in, whether it's in an industry or an art form, rather than how you want to be perceived as a critic and who you want to think that you're cool or something. Because that's what I think is happening oftentimes with a lot of critics nowadays, at least. And I think that it was the same before. It's just I can't say for sure because I did not witness them working. I did not live for hundreds of years to tell you for sure. So I'm just gonna say that currently that's what the critics are doing, is that oftentimes there's some pieces, especially about popular media, that is enjoyed by girls, that are definitely written for just contemporaries to feel a certain way about. That's what oftentimes happened with either bands like One Direction or anything that was specifically enjoyed by the younger demographic, and especially the female demographic. I have noticed that a lot with Bratz, for example, and that's why actually it came to mind for me, because a couple of days ago, maybe it was even yesterday, I saw this guy who made a video about Bratz, and like all of his opinions were genuinely just like his impressions off of what other people were saying his entire life. Did not do any research or anything, just like piled a bunch of shit on the franchise of Bratz in general, being like, they're bratty, they go to clubs, they're this, they're that. And as I said before in my Bratz video, I did not see anything even remotely risque in that series, even though I was expecting to, because there was just so much fuss about it that I just genuinely thought there was going to be something. Anyway, so that whole review was definitely more about him being perceived in a certain way by people and not about what the actual work he's talking about is like. And I think that nowadays with the likes of Anthony Fantano, like the guy who's from, you know, the needle drop guy, we need more people whose personality and political leanings and other things like that we know, for the sake of culture kind of being preserved for the future. Because the way that the way that the meaning of artworks gets warped because of what is written down in history, what isn't written down in history, and who was reviewing it at the time, and you not knowing their entire background, which is like, in a way, it shouldn't be so influential. You should be leaving a lot of things at the door, whatever, when you're talking about the quality of work. But I don't think that it's possible. I don't think that it's possible to be unbiased. And it would have been a lot better if a lot of the critics had some sort of a reputation in a sense of their like political leanings and stuff like that, because it's sometimes really difficult to figure out whether someone was writing something that was even of value about someone's work because they were biased against the group of people that the artists belong to. We really need really good critics, not people who are just good at analyzing media, but people who know art and history of the medium they're talking about, and also know how it like fits into culture, and not just, you know, like North American culture, all over the place, more like. Because now that I think about it, even things like the dystopian films of 2010s would be really hard to grasp in terms of why they were even so popular, or why there were so many of them, etc., etc., if you do not have the backdrop of, you know, the state of the world that was going on at the same time. Even though it's pop culture, it's still it's incredibly influenced by politics and by current situation, economically speaking, and other things like that. For example, if we talk about abstract expressionism, and what even is the difference between abstract expressionism and just abstract art in general, it becomes kind of like a really messy thing to explain, because technically speaking, there is not much of a difference, really. The difference was manufactured for the sake of marketing, and abstract expressionism was a very big tactic of the time to make the American art kind of associate with freedom and, you know, all of this kind of individualistic ideals and stuff like that. And when there were a lot of critics who were writing massive papers about current artists or their works, you would oftentimes not think, especially, you know, in university when we were reading those, we would never talk about the people who wrote those papers as in who they were, and especially in terms of their work, right? What did they tend to write about people? Did they tend to be more harsh on technical skills, or did they not give a flying fuck? You know, there's a lot of critics who genuinely do not care, if we talk about music, for example, about having vocals on a track that have the biggest range, that can hit the most, the widest variety of notes, and they care more about the quality, the timbre of the song, the voice. And then there's some people who just care about the skill in a traditional sense. Not that, for example, a person knows how to sing, but uses the voice in a very deliberate way to portray a specific emotion or to conceptually fit the project. And they genuinely don't care about that. They need the vocals to be displayed at their max capacity, like all the time, 24/7. So there's different types of approaches to it, and I feel like now at least we know more about the critics that write all of these think pieces. You know, we can determine based on their demeanor and who they are as people and what they've said before about artworks that we are familiar with, to determine whether their opinion is in any shape or form biased in that particular moment or with that particular artist, etc. I genuinely am glad that's kind of more accessible now. You can just go to someone's Twitter and see what they've tweeted in the past like couple of days or what their likes are like, and it would give you a bit of an idea whether they are the right person to talk about this or they're completely unrelated to the experience at hand that's being discussed in this artwork, for example, where their opinion is not that important, not needed, and not that interesting in general. So yeah, critics are really important, and I wish we had more of them, like Anthony Fantano, in a sense of like having a lot of influence and at the same time being independent, not relying on a whole publication to support them, in a sense of, you know, oftentimes a lot of publications kind of have a certain approach to things, I guess, where like people are a little bit more harsh just because they're writing for a certain publication, or they start writing in a bit of a different style than what they would want to deliver information in. Because we have quite a few people who do comment on things that happen culturally speaking. So for example, like that podcast that ripped into that girl even though she was right about what she was talking about, specifically, you know, work conditions for the working class or for middle class, whatever the hell. But when it comes to art, oftentimes it is still kind of in the, I guess it's oftentimes boring reading about it. Like, I buy art magazines. I had a subscription to one of them, for example, and I was getting it for a whole year, and a lot of the critiques would even bore me, even though that's my area of expertise. Like, when I read it, I did not have to look up shit or anything, you know. It's not like a type of writing that required a lot of looking up of information for me, because I just kind of already knew what they were referencing. And even then, Hopa is ripping up a piece of paper, and even then I was still bored, which is just not a good sign. If your target demographic is bored, how are you gonna get more people interested? Or I don't know, I feel like it should be a little bit more spicy. Maybe people should say things sometimes that are not 100% right, but at the same time still put in effort into it, because I feel like there's a lot of people who claim to be critics when in reality they don't do any research or anything like that. It's okay to have an opinion that might age poorly if you've done your due diligence, and maybe you're gonna change your mind in 20 years or whatever the fuck, you know. But it's really strange to constantly see people speaking on things out of turn in a way where they did not put any work into understanding what the hell they're even talking about, or whether their opinion is in any shape or form within what is considered to be constructive, I guess. Anyway, we need more critics. Red Velvet has an amazing album out. Go check out their music, especially their Velvet B-sides. Like, find a Velvet playlist. It's usually just literally called like Red Velvet's Velvet playlist or whatever. You are not gonna regret it if you like R&B or like sultry type of sounds. President Snow is too hot, sexy, cool. Don't understand why. Like, so fine, it's stupid. And I am still working on Witch. Girl, it's killing me. I'm not gonna lie to you. It's moving so slowly because there's just so many, like, every time I try to explain a plot hole, I have to bring up so much shit to explain it because they reference it multiple times and they get it wrong every single time. And it's just kind of like, okay, what are we doing here, you know? And second of all, I am excited because at least there's going to be something fun coming up where I will react to some of the iconic movies that are so fun to watch as an adult because they're just so like fascinating, so camp in the best way possible. So movies like Barbie as the Princess and the Pauper. And I actually put up a voting thing on my main channel if you want to vote basically the order in which I'm going to react to those movies, because there's one Bratz movie, one My Scene movie, and one Barbie movie. I think the order is going to be Barbie, Bratz, My Scene, but I'm going to react to all of them while I'm working on a big project, because it's just, at least there's not a lot of research, there's just preparation in terms of like how I want it to be filmed. And also it's just fun. I think that we have a lot of fun in those videos, even though they might not get the most views. I feel like we're enjoying ourselves, so I'm gonna continue doing them. Thank you for listening, thank you for watching, whichever you're doing. Ask me if you have any questions about art that no one answered before, and I will answer them in this podcast. It's been nice chatting with you. I'll see you next week. I promise. Bye.